Environmental Protection Advisory Committee to the Alachua County Commission. For technical reasons, we are actually calling this an EPAC committee meeting, so therefore I need to follow the agenda. So I need to call the meeting to order and determine if we have a quorum of EPAC members here. Can all the EPAC members please raise their hands? Okay. We have a quorum, I believe. Do you concur, Gus? All right, we have a quorum. I would like to have somebody motion to review and adopt the agenda.
Reviewed and so adopted.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. I would like to welcome all our guests to our meeting today. My name is Mary Alford. I'm chair of the EPAC committee. I've been a Gainesville resident my entire life. I was born here. I'm a professional engineer and executive director of the U.S. Green Building Council. I am a part owner of an A&E firm called the Sustainable Design Group, but mostly I'm here today as an EPAC committee chair. The EPAC committee was established just over 30 years ago to advise the Alachua County Commission on environmental programs and policies. It's a group of 11 board-appointed citizens plus one alternate, and we tackle a whole range of environmental issues. In this past year or so, there's been a lot of discussion about development and that the impact of development on our county. And because not all of us are experts on development, it was because of that we wanted to look outside of our committee to other experts in the community, and we felt that the citizens of Alachua County would benefit from that conversation as well. So that's what brought us here today. Just so you know, I believe we have an opening on the EPAC committee, so since all of you guys are obviously interested in environmental issues, I recommend that you put in an application to serve on the EPAC committee. So this is the first of three conversations that we hope to have. This conversation is going to focus on water and wetlands. The second one will focus on natural resources, everything except water and wetlands, but we felt like water needed to be separate because it's such a huge topic in our county. Then finally, we'll be talking about the built environment, and we've defined the built environment as anything not nature-made but man-made. At each event, we hope to continue the conversation with the ultimate goal to learn what can and should be changed in our county with respect to development. We're looking for specific things that we can add into or change about our comprehensive plan and help protect our future here in a sustainable way. So that being said, let's talk about sustainability just really briefly and the purpose of the meeting. First, we're here to talk about the future of all development in Alachua County, not any one particular project. We're going to be quite strict on that regard. Sustainability for the purposes of this meeting includes social equity. I'm taking cold medicine, so I apologize for being a little sticky mouthed here. which is providing healthy environments for all of our citizens and visitors to live in and work and play. Secondly, sustainability, as you might suspect, encompasses environmental protection, which is management of our ecosystems, our air and our water, and our land use. Finally, it has to be economically viable, because if it doesn't provide for the prosperity of all of our citizens, then it doesn't work. And we want to consider the long term in all decisions, not short term gain. So with that in mind, let's talk about some practical things. I'd like to thank Freddie from Domino's Pizza. He's the manager of Domino's Pizza. He has donated 12 pizzas, which will be delivered shortly, and they'll be in the back of the room. And so please help yourself very quietly. Go back and get yourself a slice of pizza, a glass of water if you need to. So I'd like to thank Domino's for supporting the effort here. I would also like to, there's pitchers of water. If the water runs out, the kitchen's right around the corner. The bathrooms are also out that door and to the left. And if you want to join the conversation, I'm going to have to make that larger, but if you could text your comments to that number, we're going to put all of the text comments and conversation, or as to make a conversation, we're going to put that on the screen. So you can see a scrolling commentary from the audience. All right? So So please be brief in your comments, because I'm the one typing them in. And try to keep expletives to a minimum. And let's see. Finally, I'd like to introduce the former EPAC chair, Bob Palmer. We are very lucky to have Bob in our community. He holds a PhD in marine biology. I never call him Dr. Palmer, but he is Dr. Palmer. He worked on the staff of the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology of the U.S. House of Representatives for 26 years, including 12 years as the staff director. He serves on a number of for-profit and not-for-profit boards and is a member of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And I'm going to turn it over to Bob.
Did you want to take a break, give people a break, or just let them wander?
No, I think if everybody's okay with it, rather than taking a break, if you feel the need to get up or have a piece of pizza or get a drink of water, can we just quietly do that so we can keep the meeting moving forward?
Quietly.
Is that everybody okay with that idea?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. I guess we should start with a moment of silence for the demise of the water bill, which died, I think, officially today in the Florida legislature. I think most of the environmental community were happy to see that, but there are others who weren't. But I guess we're going to have to wait at least a year for that bill to come back. So, I want to try to keep this moving, keep it entertaining. It's warm in here. We have five great panelists. I'll introduce them in a minute. And we're not going to allow them opening statements, although perhaps a short closing statement would be appropriate, where they can sum up what they've learned in the session. But this is mostly going to be a Q&A session with me lobbying questions and they providing the A's. And at the end as well, if there are elected officials here who'd like to make a statement, I see at least one in the audience, that will certainly be allowed. And Mary, as chairwoman, if you'd like to sum up at the end, that would be great as well. The questions we're going to be raising tonight were actually supplied by the panelists at the request of EPAC. And we got a lot of great questions. Thank you all for taking the time and effort to do that. I've tried to consolidate them, edit them a bit. I probably have 20 to 25 questions that these guys supplied, and there's not going to be time to obviously ask all of them. So I would ask all of you to make your responses brief, pointed, and what I hope to do, and hopefully you guys can do it on your own, is engage each other up here. It's always more interesting when panelists sort of spark off each other, so hopefully that will happen. And I guess we're going to take some, where'd Mary get to? I guess we're going to take some time at some point through this. We have 2 hours blocked out. Whether we take it all is up in the air. We'll see how this goes. But there'll certainly be some time at the end for questions from this group here, as well as some that I think were sent in before this meeting, because there was an opportunity to do that. So I'm going to go through a very brief introduction of the panelists alphabetically. And first in the alphabet is Cynthia Barnett. Which one of you is Cynthia? Environmental journalist, 25 years, author of 3 highly acclaimed books on water, Mirage, Blue Revolution, and Rain, in that order. Rain was reviewed a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times Sunday Review of Books, got a glowing recommendation. I think most of us here know Cynthia or know her work. Del Botcher comes up next in the alphabet. Founder, CEO, bottle washer, General Poobah of Soil and Water Engineering Technology, correct? Environmental consultant in many areas, water resource modeling, pollution abatement, agricultural best management practices, which I'm sure will come up today. Mark Clark, next in the alphabet, right there. University of Florida professor in wetland ecology. Mark's worked all over the state in issues related to wetlands, nutrient cycling, nutrient storage, ecological engineering, and so forth. A very experienced guy. Pierce Jones in the dark shirt, UF IFAS Extension Program Leader for Energy Programs, expert on educational programs related to energy efficiency, resource efficiency, water conservation, efficient landscaping, and so forth. And Mark Kramer, who says he's a professor of environmental pedology or pedology?
Pedology.
And biogeochemistry, which means he's a soil scientist, I think.
Yes.
Is that close?
That's close.
Expert in interactions among climate, the biosphere, and the soil zone. So, great panel. Let me say a word how we're going to proceed here. As I said, we got all these questions that are all over the map in terms of water, wetlands, conservation, future trends, solutions, problems, etc. I sat down and thought about how to structure this so there's some semi-logical flow, and hopefully this is going to work. So what I've done is break these questions into three areas, and I want to go through them sequentially, more or less. There's going to be some slop between the areas, but the first area, if I can use hand signals, is where we are today. The second area is where we're going, and the third area is what do we do about it? So where are we, what are the future trends, and what do we do about it? So the first category, where are we? We're going to look at questions about what's the current condition of the county's waters and wetlands? How are these resources being affected? Who's doing the affecting? Where are the impacts coming from? Are there some initiatives ongoing now that are working well? And what are the big challenges for maintaining environmental quality? That's all kind of snapshot of what's going on now. The second area, where are we going? There are some trends that are going to affect the county, not only water, but all kinds of things in this county. Demographics, we're looking at, I've heard for Florida as a whole, we're looking at 20 to 30% population growth in the next 20 years. I doubt it's much different in this county. More people, more demands, more stresses. Regulatory trends, that's hard to predict what Tallahassee is going to do, but we're clearly in an anti-regulatory mode statewide. That will have an impact. Development pressures, we're not looking at specific developments, as Mary said, but with more people, we have more development pressures. Agriculture, we know agriculture is, I think, is increasing in north central Florida. In general, just anecdotally, one drives around and looks. We also know there's been some agriculture that's moved up here from South Florida. There's been agriculture that's moving here now from California. Carrots, I understand. So will agriculture increase over the next period of time? And lastly, in Mark's particular area, climate change. So these are a lot of changes that are coming. We're not in a static situation. So we can look at where we are now, consider these changes that are coming, and think about how they're going to affect water quality, water quantity, wetlands. And finally, what can we do about it, given where we are and where we're headed? What do we need to do or to change to ensure a sustainable future? And I think we want to consider both future developments and the current built environment when we look at that. So, any questions on that? That's what I hope to direct this conversation in that semi-logical fashion. We'll see how it goes. So, first question under the where are we category, a very general question, and I think for all these questions, I'm not going to recognize people unless you feel like you're being cut off and want to raise your hand, I'll recognize you. But anyone that wants to jump in should. Anyone that wants to engage another panelist should. So, and all these questions ought to sound real familiar to at least one of you. Unless your memory is as bad as mine, in which case you may not remember what you wrote. But this was a good general start kickoff question that somebody contributed. How do you define the term sustainability in terms of water quantity and water quality? And relative to that, is sustainable water management attainable in this county? If not, is there a more appropriate management goal that is attainable? So, sustainability, what is it? Is it attainable? Anybody, feel free, including the author. May have been you. Susan.
I mean, I guess you want to go for it.
I don't know if you're looking at
it. No, go ahead.
Whoever. But I think the question is yes, you know, hopefully, for our future benefit, the answer is yes, that it is going to be a sustainable resource.
Can I guess, we're getting noises from the back that they can't hear, so if you could speak up as best you can. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Let me direct my attention out then. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. What I was saying is that for our future benefit, hopefully we are going to have a sustainable resource. And based upon the current assessment of our water balance, I think it's extremely hopeful that we will be sustainable going forward. Lathrop County in particular is actually, when you look around the state and around the country, we're kind of blessed with water, which is unfortunately not the case in many other areas. And when we look to the future as far as sustainability, as we go, the future is going to become more towards urban development in this county than it is going to be agricultural. I think that's what most people would see. And there's a lot of things within an urban development growth to where we can maintain sustainability because the water balances can be maintained within an urban environment. And we can get into those details, but that's just initial thoughts.
So to add, basically, from the standpoint of a definition, it's really probably more of a scientific one, but the concept of a mass balance, and you know, you touched on it with the idea that, you know, whatever you're consuming basically has to be in balance with whatever the supply rate is. And so when we talk about quantity, it's got to be in balance. But we also have to think about the quality side of things and whether or not we're creating, consuming, or applying nutrients at the assimilative capacity of the landscape. And so from the standpoint, in my mind, of what is the term sustainability, it is establishing that mass balance so that you don't have a net change over some duration of time, which is whatever your window of evaluation is. And so the question then becomes, can you achieve that? And I think conceptually you can, but I think it's going to require some dramatic changes in the way we go about managing those inputs and outputs.
Are we measuring that mass balance today?
I think no.
Hard to attain it if we don't know what it is.
Holistically, I would say no. In certain areas, we're approaching that. I mean, where we have identified water quality issues, I think we're recognizing that we have gone beyond that net balance. And so under certain instances, certain watersheds are beginning to provide that accounting. From a water quantity standpoint, I'll defer that one to Pierce because I think he may have some better answers from that quantity. But I think to a limited extent, we're getting there, but I don't know if it's as refined as we need to be. And not to jump the gun on the climate change, but that's when the balance of the inputs may change. So whatever that balance is now that might be sustainable is a moving target to some respects.
Any comments? I would ask if anyone wants to elaborate. Sustainability can apply to human needs as well as the environmental needs. And, you know, I could argue today that we're not acting sustainably in the sense that we have water bodies in this county and that border this county that aren't getting enough water today. We have springs on the Santa Fe that are often dry or very depleted. We have an MFL on the Santa Fe River because we don't have enough water there. So, you know, I would say, would people argue that we're in a sustainable mode right now for the environment? I wouldn't. Anybody care to argue with me on that?
I'll just add, maybe put some of Mark's terms in layperson's terms. The way to think about this is that we live with water today in a way that doesn't jeopardize the ability of future generations, so people and businesses and ecosystems, to live well with that water tomorrow. And Del used the term blessed, that we're blessed with water. And I think what we have to remember is the mistakes of the past and all of those places that also thought they were blessed with water. You know, Atlanta being a good example, there are plenty of places all over the wet South that have felt really blessed with water, and they managed to not live sustainably. But to answer the ultimate question, I think we absolutely can live that way, but Mark is right. It will take a real change in the way we live with water.
I'm going to jump ahead to one I wasn't going to ask for a while, but we talk about sustainability and what we all need to do, including our leaders, at the local level and beyond the local level. And this was one of your questions that I like, which reads, there are numerous water quality policies at the state and regional level intended to protect water resources. For example, state water quality standards, stormwater requirements, MFLs, TMDLs. Are these state level policies adequate to protect local resources, or should more be done locally to address water quality impacts? And you know, this is unfortunately a bit of a legal question. There's questions what local jurisdictions can even do legally to supersede what the state is required to do. But any reaction to that? Do we need to be looking beyond just, you know, what our, and if so, how far beyond what the state is supposed to be doing under state law to protect our water quality and quantity? And if so, how far can we go before we get sued by the state?
I mean, there are some pretty significant conceptual approaches to addressing water quantity and quality, things like minimum flows and levels, things like TMDLs and American Nutrient Criteria. I mean, a lot of these state-level programs are directionally correct, but it's going to take local actions to effectively implement them, because again, it's going to take a dramatic change in the way we behave with water, both in quantity and quality, to achieve, you know, go beyond that. I mean, one of the things that I was just in a meeting this afternoon, and we were talking about springs and how the state standard is at 0.35 right now, and that is actually about 7 times higher than what some estimates of historic background levels were. So that still gives us a buffer in some respects of adding more than what may have naturally been there, but it's going to take a tremendous reduction in the loading potential in the landscape to get to the 0.35. And that's going to have to happen not just at a state level programmatic, it's going to have to happen at individual scales, both in urban and agricultural landscapes. And you know, however local policies can move forward to assist and facilitate those. And there's not going to be enough of the water police or the fertilizer police to do that. It's going to be about recognizing the desire within the community to achieve those goals so that we're kind of self-regulating because we see the value and the resource to protect.
I'll jump into that one. I'll just, by the way, I didn't write any of those questions. I didn't have time, but so those questions weren't for me, but they're great questions. I would just use stormwater regulations as an example. The state has worked, DEP worked for more than 10 years to try to come up with really progressive stormwater regulations, some of the most progressive in the nation, and they've been shelved as job killers. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, the stormwater regulations statewide are non-existent or weak or old-fashioned. All of these people at UF are coming up with really fascinating progressive ideas for how we can live differently with water, and we don't do as a state the very things that our state university scientists are telling us will work to help us live differently. So I would say that Alachua County can do much better than the state, and that should be our goal and our vision to try to, you know, in the dearth of leadership, to lead locally.
I don't know the answer to this, and maybe you do or maybe you don't, but could the county do that in terms of stormwater basin requirements, or would the state not allow the county to do that? That's an issue that comes up repeatedly, obviously, and it seems to come up more often as the state sort of preempts local ability to intervene on these matters. Do you know the answer to that?
I think there's a lot we can do, and I think there's a lot that the private sector could do if they wanted to, but I think Pierce would be the better one to answer that question.
I'm sitting here being very nice, throwing no bombs.
Well, Mark had his hand up. So.
Well, I was just going to say, I think there are certainly opportunities for the county to implement practices that should improve on the functionality of stormwater basins. I don't think they can set an alternative standard.
Right.
But I think there are certainly opportunities. For instance, Alachua County has an open space ordinance that can be met by enhancing a stormwater retention basin to provide improved water quality and biodiversity practices. So I think there are certain things that certainly could be more progressive. I just think that the standards, certain aspects, you probably do cross the line. Where that line is, I'm not exactly sure.
Anything else? Okay. Mary mentioned the comprehensive plan. Wetlands are covered extensively. Strategic ecosystems are covered extensively. We have some experts on that plan in the room. So here's a real simple question. How many wetlands do we need? How many strategic ecosystems do we need in this county? Commissioners are not recognized at this point. Anyone want to catch that grenade? Sir?
No less than now.
Would you say that's a scientific answer? Because you're no, I'm serious. Because you're very good at always saying we really need to stick to the science, and I know that's one of your guiding principles. So I mean, I'm curious. The answer you just gave, would you characterize that as a scientific answer?
Well, I would, because the wetlands are a vital part of how our water resources function in this county. If we change our density of wetlands, we're going to change that hydraulic function. Now, the thing that's really kind of scary about it from a water supply standpoint, wetlands, if you look at what are their values, and I think that's what you got to look at. And primary values are obviously wildlife habitat, all the natural things that come with that. Ability to filter clean water, water quality. And where I come down on most of these issues, water quality is our bigger issue that we have to address, because we actually generate water from our urban setting. When I use the word generate, what I mean is from rainfall, more of the rainfall gets converted into runoff or recharge in an urban setting, but we end up polluting that water and it doesn't become a viable resource for the community. Wetlands serve the function of helping clean those resources and providing that water back as a functional part of our system. Let the wetland go.
Well, I don't think I could better that answer. I think the question, the reverse question is, again, back to this balance. I think we've crossed the balance line now, so I agree that we need to preserve what we can, but in the broader context, is that also sustaining social equity in these other aspects? And if you start moving into that mass balance, how many wetlands do you need to provide a certain specific function? Function for what? Quantity, quality? And I think without the need side defined, how do you determine what the level of ecosystem services that are being provided now in the landscape are necessary? And so it's, I agree. I think we should not give up anything that we have now, because I think we're already behind in that balance. But without defining what the need is, I think it's hard to, scientifically determine what the balance is.
Del described the values of wetlands very, very well. Thank you. Del, I'm curious, are they... Your view, are they properly accounted for in, the comp plan and other? I mean, I look, for instance, at the sheet flow project. I see Rick here from GRU. That was $25 million, roughly, for the Paynes Prairie sheet flow project to essentially restore a wetland. And that's a lot of money to restore one. So, the cure is cost a lot more than the prevention.
I did want to interrupt you, but the pizza is back there, and don't forget we have the ongoing questions posted behind your head here.
So again, given how much it costs to restore wetlands as opposed to preventing degradation of wetlands, I'm just wondering if those values you think are properly accounted for in the public debate, the public policy forum. Haven't read the comp plan lately, I guess.
I think they're accounted for, but are they, is the plan and the protection of them actually occurring at the level to which we need it to be happening? Are we kind of skirting around it in some areas in order to do developments? Are we compensating for the wetlands appropriately? I mean, there's those questions. But I think it's pretty clear the preservation of the wetland is the highest priority.
Mark mentioned need. I'm wondering how the what kind of data we have on use and need. I've heard, for instance, at times we ought to have a water balance for Alachua County, so we clearly don't have all the data to enable us to do that. Do we have the data that tells us what wetlands are contributing? Do we have the data to tell us in good detail? Pierce probably knows this better than anyone, what water use currently is in Alachua County. We have a lot of private wells, I guess we don't count. So what do the current water usage patterns look like in this county? I think that's a kind of a good basic question. And this may be yours. What drives water consumption in development projects?
We've looked at water consumption in Alachua County. Obviously, GRU is the source of most of the data, all of the data that we have. We've not looked at Hawthorne and the other smaller water utilities, but when we look at their water usage, I guess the pattern that we're seeing and that I've been addressing there or trying to address is where in our residential communities in particular are we seeing the hot spots for water consumption? And I don't think it's any real mystery to anyone that the big hot spot is the western part of the county. Big surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the east side, Forest Lake and some of these small, Cedar Grove too, water consumption in those homes is quite low, 190 gallons per day per household or 100 gallons per household per day, whereas on the west side, 500 gallons per household per day. That data is readily available, and readily available, we can parse that data down. In other jurisdictions, you can parse it down to daily consumption. So we know a lot about where water is being consumed. And I only posed that question in the context of how you're going to create water policy and do development approvals. I would like to be held accountable to budgets. But we have the data, so that can be done. So you don't have to do Florida-friendly landscaping, just establish the budget, and whatever you can do within that budget, do it. But anything else, when you hear Florida-friendly landscaping, Florida Water Star, Water Smart, Water Sense, any of those things, don't believe them. It tells you nothing about actual consumption. And so that's the key message, and that was the point of that question, was just to bring up the fact that we have the data, but we're not actually using the data to guide our decision making.
Can I ask Pierce a question?
Sure, that'd be great.
Pierce, what is the answer to helping those communities on the west side that are using upwards of 500 gallons of water per day to reduce their water use? Is it an irrigation regulation, or what is it?
My personal opinion, based on anecdotal information that I get from GRU and OUC and JEA, is that it is absolutely about irrigation. You do see a direct correspondence, homes with pools, but those are also larger homes.
Yeah.
Maybe they wash their cars, maybe they take longer showers, I don't really know. But definitely, irrigation, landscape irrigation, in my view, is the key.
But we already have days, we already have watering days, so what more needs to happen specifically? Is it an irrigation ordinance?
I think that we definitely need an irrigation ordinance, but I think that the key is to work with the developers at the front end.
Yeah.
This is a pattern book. This is for celebration. You know the Disney development, the well-known Disney development celebration? And if you look in the pattern book, it tells you that all landscaped areas shall be fully irrigated with an automated underground irrigation system. Okay? That document, the pattern book, goes into the conditions, covenants, and restrictions, the legal document that defines the community. From this, you obtain the HOA governing practices. So the HOA enforces the practices that are implemented in the conditions, covenants, restrictions that are described in the pattern book. If you don't get to the developer at the front end and establish a different culture, then you've got this problem of trying to undo things. And now you've got irrigation audit programs, soil moisture sensor installation programs, rain shutoff devices. There are all kinds of things that we can attempt to do after the fact, but the cows are all out of the barn. And you get one back in the pasture at a time. But right now, what we need is to address this consumption growth pattern on the west side of the county. And the way you're going to do that is in the approval process. Right now, county staff aren't asked to even consider water consumption of these projects. If you happen to be near the Kanapahaw plant, we would like for you to use some of the reclaimed water, for example, Oakmont is doing, and Wiles Plantation, Hale Plantation, all use reclaimed water. But you can go back and talk about springs protection and nutrient loading that comes through that reclaimed water. Places like Sanibel Island, that's a major concern, and I think it's going to become a concern in this community if we keep moving in those directions. So I won't keep going because...
So you get more opportunities.
Good.
And Cynthia, I'll say, you know, the third section of this discussion is what do we do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And we will come back. That's such an important issue that Pierce raises. We will come back to it both in terms of developments and the already built environment, which, as he points out, is a tougher problem in terms of the cows being out of the barn. You should also know, and we're not going to have time tonight to go into this, but anyone in the audience certainly may. There is a water conservation landscape irrigation ordinance working its way through the county commission. I don't think it's been approved yet. Is that correct, Commissioner? But it has some of these elements in it. I think there's some question legally about how much the county can do. And I raised that question earlier. For instance, one of the concerns I know GRU has is if you do pricing to make it difficult for people to water their lawns excessively, at some point they're going to drill their own well, which isn't metered and is free. And does the county have any ability to preclude people from doing that? That's a legal question, but one that could, you know, could have an impact. So we'll come back to all those things. I'll just throw out one more question in the chapter one here, which is where are we today? Dell said his bigger concern was water quality. What about the rest of you? Are you more concerned in this county about water quantity or water quality? And where should we focus our resources most, given your answer? Residential, urban, industrial, ag, silviculture, surface water, groundwater? What's the big problem? Where should the focus be? The county has limited dollars, limited legal authority. Where should it apply its resources to these quality, quantity problems? Dr. Clark.
I mean, I don't think they're necessarily decoupled. I think saying one's more than the other is, I think if I had to pick, I would pick water quality. But in many instances, the two are coupled. Oftentimes, addressing quality issues is related to managing irrigation better. And, you know, it's essentially trying to figure out how to minimize that irrigation. It can also be a factor that's mobilizing or the matrix that's moving the nutrient from its source to the problem area. But, you know, there's multiple examples from groundwater to surface water to lakes to streams where we have water quality issues, mainly, I would say, in the area of eutrophication, nutrient issues. But, you know, it's not just nutrients. It's bacteria and metals to a certain extent, even though I'm not sure why iron shows up as much as it does. But I think water quality is a serious issue. But really, I don't think those two can be decoupled.
I agree with Mark about that quality and quantity need to be addressed together. And in terms of, you know, what I do is try to communicate with the public about these issues and boil it down and communicate science to the people who might be using 500 gallons of water a day. And it's a very... To me, this is a simple message, and it's something we can achieve. We need to use less and pollute less. And that's something we can say that's something that's easy to understand, and in every single sector you mentioned, urban, ag, industrial, we are using less and polluting less all the time and will continue to do so. And that is, you know, that is something we need to communicate, not just to the uber interested in environmental issues, but to the whole community. And I think it's easier to do that when we can talk about quality and quantity together, using less and polluting less.
Just to get a data point out here, we're talking a lot about the waste.